As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that vocal shouting, it's Danger.
Dave Ninemitz.
It's Danger.
Dave Ninemitz.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of Hear That Podcast Growlin'. Paul Junior, Dave Ninemitz of The Athletic. Excited to be with you here. It is a Tuesday, Bengals Steelers Saturday at 4:30 on NBC. We've got a lot to get to. Mo Egger will join us, of course. And we'll start. There's still just a lot of buzz percolating off of the game Saturday. There's just still a lot of can't believe what I just saw type of chatter. So we gotta sift through some of that while still getting into a massive game against Mason Rudolph and the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It's fun reading on the Twitter, the X, if you will, how frightened people are of Mason Rudolph. It's like the lower on the pecking order of quarterbacks, the more frightened people are that yeah. guy's going to have the game of his life. And that's not just the Bengals. That's every team fears the backup quarterback, which, I mean, the backup to Mitch Trubisky, like, I don't know.
Nick Mullins was third in line, too.
Yeah,
okay. That's true. And there's a little bit of a seen this show before.
Yeah.
When the Mason Rudolph shows up, it's like, oh, he's going to be the guy this time, you know?
You just smack him over the head with his helmet.
Apparently.
That's what you do.
Just whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's a shame. I mean, this guy has, like, he's played himself into a career in the NFL, had a nice little college career, and he's best going to be known because someone whacked him in the head with his helmet. It's just tough. Tough breaks. So we got some news to get to, and I've got a story up now on – I did it, Dave. I apologize for it, but I used this – I used the is the Super Bowl still in play angle here. And it's and interesting, this was not just me saying things. It's because I was convinced by some fact patterns. If you're interested in such things. And I know you are, or you're going to be forced to be.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't stop people, though, from accusing you of just saying things.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah, I expected this.
There's still many that blame you for the season spinning out of control because of your preseason prediction. But
this
now
wasn't a prediction.
Now you're kind of you're backing up your preseason prediction now. And you're getting in trouble for that. People don't want to, they don't want you being showing the optimistic side of things.
I'm not trying to be too optimistic. We'll get into that here in a minute. it's the last thing I want to do to you people. Not this time of year.
No.
So I've got all kinds of controversy with the Growler Bet this weekend that we've got to sift through because it turned to a place I was concerned about that really really hit our listenership square in the mouth. So we'll get to that too. News wise, oh, good friend of the program, Ryan Wilson, going to be on Thursday. You know, Ryan works for CBS, does a ton of draft coverage for them, but also really in tune with everything that's going on in the league. He has a background. He knows Pittsburgh really well, and we just make each other laugh. So Ryan's going to come join. Love Ryan. It'd be great to have him on this week. He's been on the program many times before. Those of you that have heard him will be before will I imagine be excited for his return. So great to have Ryan joining us. All right, no Ja'Marr Chase this week, it looks like. His shoulder injury, you know, the results, MRI results came back, and it's probably going to miss some time. We don't know what that will be. We're recording this before we have a chance to even, we haven't even been in the locker room yet since the game against Minnesota. So day to day was the original call from Zach Taylor. So we'll see if they go more official on that or stick with the day to day hope. But looks like no Ja'Marr this weekend. That Ian Rappaport kind of original on that report. DJ Reader and DJ Ivy both went on IR. No corresponding moves just yet. No adding of Tyler Tarte that I know a lot of people wanted to see happen from Tennessee. Houston ends up snagging the, I don't know, disgruntled defensive tackle, but you know, it is kind of interesting that he went on waivers right as the Bengals lost DJ Reader. It's like if you want to, like, you know, double team soaking up run stopping defensive tackle, a pretty good one just became available. But no, Houston ends up snagging him off the waiver wire. Mentioned Mason Rudolph declared the starter. They're done with the Trubisky thing there. Dave, we've reached this point in the season where a lot of coaches are just out of ideas. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I guess Rudolph could play, right? Maybe put Simeon or Boyle in. I don't know, man.
It's yeah. The Jets come to mind because now it's even like everybody hates Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson then comes back, has one good game. Now we kind of like Zach Wilson. Then he's back to being bad. Then he gets hurt. But this is kind of the same. I think Pittsburgh Steeler Nation kind of convinced themselves at times that Trubisky was this quality backup that you could be happy to have, and he's not. He's just been Mitch Trubisky. So you're right. I think you play these cards and you're like, yeah, look at this guy. You
I mean, look
forgot
at it
how.
though. Look at Cleveland, right? They're like, I mean, I don't know. Flacco's sitting at home. And here you go. And now it's like, you know, the Flacco redemption arc is upon us. You know, amazing. You can throw three interceptions, some of them awful, and find a way to win a game. And it's like still on the Flacco train because it's better than what they were watching before. You
It's
know,
still right in the playoff hunt.
you know,
Down to your
right in it.
fourth quarterback.
I mean, they're you know, they've got more steam than ever, it seems, up there in Cleveland. So we got a lot to get to in that regard. But more importantly, I would say more importantly, whatever three card Monty of Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitch Trubisky you want to play on the streets outside of Pittsburgh, I think no Minkah Fitzpatrick is a much bigger deal. That game at safety, and then DeMontre Casey suspended for the year, so they're down both safeties. And so as Jake Browning has been obviously having this very successful run, they've been passing it at will. You gotta like those. That's a good break. Those are good breaks for the Bengals entering this game in Pittsburgh, one that they have to have. There's no question. So let's dive into this, Dave, a little bit before we bring Mo in. So I did this thing, and I'm sort of I started out wanting to talk about how I think the conversation has changed around Jake Browning, because like we just said, you've got all these backup quarterbacks, and they play have a good game, and they're the answer, and then they're benched a couple weeks later, and then they like them again, and that's what backup quarterbacks are. There's like a level that they eventually regress to, or they're just roller coasters and you just get a great game and an awful game. Well, as these stats come out and you've got what you have here with Jake Browning, who now has four games of a sample size where you've seen him go against good defenses, okay defenses, in big spots, in clutch, you know, two overtime wins, and put up these numbers. And I just think that, you know, we're not really talking about flash in the pan anymore with Jake Brown. I think you can feel pretty confident about his consistency, you know, because here's what I did. I just looked at the combination of in your first four starts, this is ever 67% completion, 7.5 adjusted net yards per attempt, and 900 total yards passing. That group, it gives you a group of 10 through first four starts that have done that. The names on the list all have had long careers. Like, this is not, people don't just do this and disappear. Chad Pennington, Kurt Warner, Tony Romo, RG3, who had the injuries, Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz, Brock Purdy now, Jim Miller. You know, one of these things is not like the other. But hey, he started 27 games for the Bears.
He might be starting for the Steelers next week.
At this point, I'm
Yeah.
not. I mean, what's crazier, Jim Miller or Flacco? You know?
About 6 of 1, half dozen the other.
So, but my point is, I mean, these are players with longevity. Pennington started 81 games, Warner 116, Romo 127. I mean, these are all, there's just not a lot of precedence to doing this for this amount of time and falling off the mat, especially when you consider how hard that was against Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, just an incredible puzzle to have to try to put together from a protection standpoint, from a challenging play standpoint, from figuring them out and then tearing them up at the end. I think there's a lot of reason to believe this. The point is, though, okay, so he's established himself as potentially, you know, you see consistency here, and it doesn't feel flash in the pan anymore. Which takes me to the second part of this conversation, which is, you know, I've talked often about, and I honestly feel like I get sick of talking about it and explaining it, because I think people are like, oh my God, are you going to do this again? The adjusted net yards per attempt thing. But again, I made sure to put the Super Bowl QBs in this thing that I've, this list that I've put out a bunch. I mean, this is it. This is the NFL in a nutshell. You either have a top eight quarterback in terms of adjusted net yards per attempt, which is just basically passing efficiency, takes into account sacks and interceptions, but also really just your yards per attempt and what you're producing. This is it. You have had the last, what is this now? What are we up to? 16 Super Bowl quarterbacks have all been in the top eight, and six of the last eight have been in the top three in this stat that make it to the Super Bowl. It, like, the other factors are just, they don't, there's no connection like this. Okay. Jake Browning is currently third. Okay. At 22% better than the average NFL quarterback this year in adjusted net yards per attempt. That puts him in that short list of these teams that all make the Super Bowl. Okay. This is not me saying the Bengals are going to the Super Bowl. I'd like to make this clear. You're about to hit send on it. I don't hit send. Don't do it. Okay. This is not me saying that. Okay. This is me saying this predictive stat, it that has been almost untouchable in the recent NFL history, includes Jake Browning currently. So if you believe that he can sustain this, if we see longevity, if you see not a flash in the pan that's going to ride this backup roller coaster and think this is who he could be right now, or some close version of it, that puts you on that short list of the rest of it doesn't necessarily matter or has not historically mattered in making a deep run, including to the Super Bowl. And so, should you rule them out? No, I'm just saying, I'm not saying put them in. I'm saying there's a path. You could see it. If Jake Browning can keep what he's doing going now that he's done over four games, you could see the path for this team to still put together that thing. I think that's on the table now a little bit after you know, that as we've now extended this out over a full month of his starting.
Yeah. Well, and he'll have three more games to add to that sample here coming up, that if he wins them,
Sure.
we revisit this and it would probably be even a clearer picture. The problem is, and it's the obvious problem, is this team's gonna have to lean on the defense, and it might not matter how good Jake Browning is. So, there's that piece of it as well. But if you're strictly talking about, and we've talked about all year, because we assume Joe Burrow would be the one whose back they were riding far into the playoffs, that there would be the huge drop off with Jake Browning, and these stats just don't show it. They show a guy who's doing what the best quarterbacks do. So, no, you're probably not running to Vegas and putting your suitcase full of money down on the Bengals to win the Super Bowl right now. But there's also no reason to just throw your hands in the air and be like, well, this is a fun ride. I don't really think they're going to go anywhere.
And that's what it was. I mean, I think even two games in, right? Two or three, even before the Minnesota game, I just think because their defense is so good and that task was so hard and what they looked like in the fourth quarter and overtime offensively, and the types of plays, high level plays Browning was making both mentally and physically, it's just like they could should be able to they could do this to anybody. And again, so there you could see it. It's not out of the question that you could see him continuing in his offense, continuing to do what they're doing, which is what they over these four games, they've been in that span. They've been eighth in points per drive, and he's been an incredibly efficient quarterback. You're right, though. I mean, the defense is going to have to do it at some point, and I don't know that they can, but the offense at this rate might be good enough to make up for that, which is the crazy part about it. Here's the thing, though. So we have our New York Times playoff leverage playoff predictor that's out there, and you can just kind of see how the percentages and the odds move based on a couple of results. The Bengals playoff probability leverage this weekend is off the charts. They play the if they right now as it sits, if they beat Pittsburgh, they would rise from a they're at 38 right now. To 54% chance. If they lose, it would plummet to 11.
That's
43% playoff probability leverage on one game. Now, granted, we're getting to the end of the season. These are North Division conference, which is an issue for Bengals and tiebreakers. The chance to eliminate the Steelers basically from the conversation. All of those things kind of in coming to a head in this very crowded group. But this is. You know, if those of you still holding on to your must-win armbands, I know we're into we had the armbands, we had like a whole separate thing, we had a whole closet full of different must-win accessories. I feel like you're maybe looking back in there and saying, I still got this, I still got my must-win hat, right? And you're like, maybe I'm gonna play the must-win fedora this weekend.
My lucky must-win socks. The percentage swing there, though, does scream. It is time to start dropping the MW.
Yeah.
I'm still a strong believer that until you're mathematically out, nothing's necessarily a must win. But man, you make your chances so much better if you just get this win.
Yeah, because I mean, if we do a classic HTPG trope and we run pass or boot this, most likely to lose, most likely the Bengals lose over the last three, Cleveland, Kansas City, Pittsburgh. I mean, where would you run pass or boot those, Dave?
Most likely to lose, I'm going to run with the Browns is most likely to lose
Yeah.
because the Browns always have the Bengals number. I will pass on Chiefs and
Yep.
then boot Steelers. I mean,
Yeah. I do the same.
yeah.
I think the Cleveland game, given the history there is more challenging than the Kansas City game in Arrowhead on New Year's Eve, which is an absurd thing to say. And I honestly doubt myself, but you just, Kansas City has just, they've just been so clunky. And not that the Browns haven't, but we know what the North has done and what the Browns have done to this team. And there's just Myles Garrett is a problem that they don't really have never been able to properly solve. And I just think there's a better chance that they could go in and play Kansas City and find a way to win against a Chiefs team that has just been so up and down this year.
And I think with the Browns, it's almost like a heightened sense of awareness for their defense. Like their defense knows they have to be good, despite, you know, the occasional Joe Flacco magic. And it just kind of makes their defense that much scarier. There's no leaning on the offense. They know they have to be at their best. So that's a tough game, especially to wind it up. But I agree with you. I've not been terribly impressed with Kansas City really all year. I mean, even when they were winning early on, they were kind of pulling games out barely. And it's like that receiving core and just the issues they have outside of Kelsey, there's just not the weapons. And their defense has kind of come back to earth some.
Yeah.
So, and
this kind of, you know, filters into the other point of it's there to me, there's three tiers. There's Baltimore on a tier all alone in the AFC. I think they're clearly the best team.
Agreed.
And then there's, I think Miami and Kansas City are probably Miami. It's like, again, let's talk about the good teams Miami has played this year. Who have the Dolphins played that was good? Jets, no. Titans, no. Commanders, no. Jets again, no. Raiders, no. This is all their last games.
Yeah.
Chiefs, oh, they lost 21-14. Patriots, they stink. Eagles, oh, they lost 31-17. Panthers, no. Giants, no. Oh, Bills, no. They lost that one 48-20. Denver early in the season was bad. Patriots, Chargers. Show me, I don't hate to go like college football playoff, but show me the signature win. Show me the win that makes you believe in the Dolphins. All they can do is play their schedule, but on those three games against quality opponents, they've been unable to win. They haven't been this offensive juggernaut. And so I think it's fair to wonder about where they really stack up. We'll learn about them. They have the Cowboys, the Ravens, and the Bills the last 3 weeks. They've just kind of backloaded their quality opponents. So we'll learn about the Dolphins. We'll see if they're for real, what their tier is. And the Chiefs we talked about, I think you can still see it. I mean, it's Mahomes, right? Like,
yeah.
There's still a chance they put it together on offense and he gets hot. Like, no one would be stunned by that. But after that, but again, they're all flawed teams. So when the Bengals, you get a lot of blowback. This Bengals defense could never make a run. Yeah, probably not, but they're just as flawed as some of these other teams are. Like, and at least they have a history of being opportunistic and making a few big plays that can win games. And they've got this unbelievable resiliency and knack for finding a way that could make something happen. And they're just as flawed as anybody, is my point, outside of probably the Ravens.
Agreed.
So, and the Ravens, look, an AFC North slobber knocker, right? Talk about teams that know each other. I mean, how many times you got to play the Ravens and know that it's going to be a coin flip game because it always seems to be.
I honestly believe if Burrow doesn't hurt his wrist in that game, there's a good chance the Bengals win that last matchup. They were moving and looking good.
Yeah. And we'll never know.
No.
But the point is, I don't think of any team in the NFL, I don't think the Bengals would be maybe at the top of the list of not having a problem of being like, look, your path is through Baltimore, just because they know exactly what they're getting themselves into. Yeah. There's so much history. Whereas you get some of these other teams are just not used to the way Baltimore plays, the style of handling Lamar, that defense is unique too, all that stuff. Like, I just think that could benefit them. One other thing, when I mentioned opportunistic defense, this stat I pulled, because we were talking about their red zone turnovers, and we've talked a lot about that this year. It's been just a stupid. They had five in the last nine games, and I was like, but you know what? I just feel like there's been more that have happened just outside of the red zone. Really, once you get into that field goal range, 35 and in, where it's like, okay, points are up now. You're just taking points off the board. So I looked at it, 35 and in. Dave, it is crazy. They have 12 turnovers this year when the opponent is on the 35 and in. I mean, and that the second, what do you think second most in the league is?
I don't know.
Detroit has 8.
Wow.
That's the second best. 12 turnovers inside the 35. Now, and it's the other thing is, this is, it's luck. Like, there's a lot of luck to that because this isn't something that is where you see consistency in this year over year. Now, the 12 turnovers, by the way, if they get one more, would be the most. I got tired of going back. I went back 10 years and I was like, I'm not going any further. Like, the most that any team has had. And the Bengals have had four, five, six, four, five, four. Like, over the that's where that number has been over the last, you just keep going back. They are more than double the best previous season they'd had in recent history. Those are just straight points off the board. And when you consider that for a defense that has still not been great, like, luck has saved them in a lot of ways in that regard. Now, and maybe it can continue to do it. Maybe there is a contagious nature to that. But I mean, at a conservative rate, that's like 40 points. Like, that they've just wiped off the board this year by being that much better than everybody.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it
Yeah, that's
really is.
absolutely crazy.
So we'll see. That's part of this conversation.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, let's bring in our good friend and yours from ESPN 1530, Mo Egger. What's up, Mo?
How we doing?
We're doing great. We were kind of talking about how I went there and said, you know, I mean, look, if the offense plays at this level, which it's showed some consistency, if you're buying the notion that Jake Browning is not a flash in the pan this deep into the sample size, and after what you saw against Minnesota, then if he plays at this level, this is the level that teams that make the Super Bowl play at offensively. So, are you willing to go there with your heart and with your mind and say, maybe I should put that back on the table? I took it off earlier. Maybe that should be back on the table now with this level of sample size.
For two reasons. One, Baltimore is really good. I'm not terrified by them. The Kansas City Chiefs are still the Kansas City Chiefs. Why would anybody in their right mind be afraid of them? I haven't seen the Miami Dolphins beat anybody any good. The winner of the AFC South is could very well be a team the Bengals have beaten, one in their building, the other here thoroughly. And then there's the Houston Texans, who they came close to beating and are without Nico Collins. Now, if the Buffalo Bills make it, boy, that's going to be a problem. But it feels very wide open, right? We did this thing a couple of weeks ago where it's like, God, this is why the Burrow injury stinks. It was there for the taking. Look at how wide open and maybe underwhelming the AFC is. So there's that. But there's also this, and I said this on my show last week, and I was talking with Chris Rose, who called the game for NFL Network, and I think he took it the wrong way. As wonderful a conversation as it was, I said, you know, if they get in, there's this, you know, almost like, all right, screw it. We've had a successful season. We're playing with house money feel that a team equipped with five postseason wins over the last 2 years will take to the playoffs. And they've got a track record of not winning in spite of their quarterback, but maybe quarterback play may perhaps not being the biggest reason why they've won playoff games. Now, that's no knock on Joe, but Paul, you and I had the conversation prior to the season. What's the next thing you want to see from Joe Burrow? I'd like to see him have at some point, and he'll have one, this iconic postseason performance where Statistically, he's insane. He makes every throw at the right time, and he carries the team with him to a postseason win. He's not played poorly in the postseason by any stretch, but when I think of those five playoff wins and I jumble them together, I think of great defense. I think of opportunistic defense. I think of really good coaching. I think of good special teams play. I think of team victories. Now, you might say, well, the Bengals aren't as good defensively as they have been. Fair. You might say, look, special teams, they've got to clean some stuff up. Fair. You might really start to worry about the accumulation of injuries. Completely fair. But if they're in the postseason, that tells me Jake Browning has played well enough that you start to take him seriously with a team surrounding him that has a winning pedigree. They've won road games. They've won at Arrowhead. Why wouldn't you consider them? You might not pick them, but the idea that, well, they'll get in and that'll be it, I don't believe that at all. Not with what I've seen and not with what I know about what this team has accomplished and just the landscape of the rest of the conference.
The crazy thing about this, Mo, is we're sitting here, and I'm going to have you run pass or boot this, but I know where mine starts. And we're talking about, man, I think the defense is going to be why they can't do it, when Jake Browning is the quarterback.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, this thing, the fatal flaw wasn't losing Joe Burrow right now. The fatal flaw is the fact that this defense and the Reader injury accentuates these issues.
Yeah.
The defense just has not shown that it's truly coming together, you know, and when Nick Mullins is running it up and down the field on you and they're making a star out of Ty Chandler, just like they did out of Devin Singletary. And it just continues to happen, you know, run, pass, or boot. What stops them from making a deep run? Browning comes back to earth, the defense issues, or the fact that the path is tough. You know, they've got to find a way to get in the first place. And then when they get there, those three: Browning back to earth, defensive issues, they're kind of behind the eight ball on their path.
Well, I want to put path in the pass position.
Okay, in the middle.
Say that five times fast.
Path pass.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do it once.
Because I don't know specifically what the path is going to look like. I don't know who they play. Don't know where they have to go.
These next three, just to get in, are going to have their own challenges.
Fine. Yes. Yeah. I mean,
They're going to one. If they get in, they're playing one of these three teams.
Right. They're starting
on the road. Yeah, we know. They're going on the road. You're probably going to either Jacksonville or Miami or maybe go back.
But also, like, the regular season path just doesn't seem all that arduous.
Yeah.
And that's maybe discounting the Joe Flacco magic in Cleveland, but I don't know what that game is going to mean for the Browns week. I don't know. I'm certainly not going to be surprised if they don't win two out of three. But I don't think any one of us are going to be stunned if they beat the Steelers and Browns. I don't think anybody would be flabbergasted if they went to Kansas City and won.
Yeah.
Right. So
we said earlier, I think the Browns game is actually the toughest game. If I was picking which one they would lose, I would put Browns above Chiefs. I think they have a better chance of going into Kansas City than they do beating the Browns, just given the history and the way the Browns have given them absolute fits.
Okay, so I'll boot past. All right, okay. I'll boot that. I just the path to the playoffs, probably Mason Rudolph, an underwhelming Kansas City offense in a place the Bengals have nearly won twice with immense stakes on the line. And the Joe Flacco Cleveland Browns week 18, when we don't know what the stakes for that team is going to be, right? So I'll boot the path. I'll run with defense. We've talked about it all season long.
Yeah.
And this model, like, you know, they deserve credit for keeping them afloat on Saturday, right? Mike Hilton, BJ Hill, they deserve credit for getting the 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1 stops without DJ Reader, showing that we don't need to ban the tush push. We just have to figure out better ways to defend it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the level of confidence, like, they tied at 17, and I'm going, okay, are the Bengals going to get the ball back with enough time to either kick a game-tying field goal or score a game-tying touchdown? I had no faith. And they also get credit for holding them to 17-3 when a touchdown probably ends it. But
yeah.
I just, like, confidence level, I don't have a lot of confidence. I it's great that they can come up with turnovers near the goal line and get a weird BJ Hill pick, but – boy, part of this just doesn't seem very sustainable. So, and now you don't have DJ Reader, and your secondary depth is being tested. And for what it's worth, DJ Ivy, who I my heart broke for on Saturday, is, you know, was getting some defensive snaps, and now you're not going to have him. So I they're just not very good defensively. I mean, just call it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
The sample size is big enough for us to say that. And so that means I'm gonna pass on Browning, because I certainly feel like he's gonna come back to earth. Like, his completion percentage is not going to sit at 75%, but the guy looks like the real deal, man. And like, yeah, by real deal, not elite quarterback, not guy who's going to make Joe Burrow expendable. What is there not to like? What hole in his game have you, again, is he certainly doesn't lack for confidence. He doesn't look like he's in over his head. He's got the world's greatest resource in Joe Burrow helping him out. Like, Is he gonna have a game where you go, okay, he's struggling a little bit here? Sure. But is he gonna make a bunch of mistakes and throw, you know, four picks? I'm putting this very clumsily, but I'll pass on Jake Browning.
I mean, here's my comp on what we're seeing in this offense. 2015 Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
The pieces are around you.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you've got a good scheme. You've got weapons galore. He's a fine quarterback that he can make it go right. Like, he's not dropping it. I don't think the Bengals knew they had 2015 Andy Dalton, where it's like, man, these numbers are crazy. Well, you put a competent quarterback around a good scheme and a bunch of weapons. It can sing pretty nicely. And I feel like I'm kind of insulting 2015 Andy Dalton a little bit, but like, the numbers are ridiculous. What Browning's doing, that's actually a compliment. And so that's enough. Like, that's, mm-hmm. that's enough, because it doesn't matter how it's constituted, as long as the production is there. And I think you could see the production be there. I feel much better that he continues to play at this high level than I do that the defense suddenly like finds some consistency.
This is not directly related to the point that you're making, but I saw you on Saturday evening.
You did?
Briefly. Mm-hmm. Stopped and had a post-game UC Dayton beer with you.
Yeah.
Then I went about my merry way, and I had even more post-game beers closer to my house. And we're reliving the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I said out loud, Jake Browning is already better than the best version of Andy Dalton. That could have been fueled by liquid.
Well, I mean, Andy Dalton, I don't know that he had a four-game run.
But that's the thing. Like, Jake Browning was making magic, man. Yeah. Like, I mean, his best throw, they blew the pass interference call on the ball downfield to T. Higgins. Like, Jake Browning is doing things, extending plays and making crazy throws. Nothing against Andy Dalton. I didn't see Andy Dalton do those things. Jake Browning is already better than the best version of Andy Dalton. But no, I think it's a fair and reasonable comp. Like, with Andy, you always thought, okay, boy, when the lights get bright, I'm not sure he has it. Mm-hmm. And that was just a fair or no. That was just a narrative that built over the course of time. What I've seen from Jake Browning doesn't suggest to me the moments are going to be too big. Now, maybe he can't win a shootout, right? Maybe they go to Miami and lose defense, can't stop anybody, and Jake is just not capable of keeping up with Tua Tagovailoa and Tyreek Hill. Maybe. And maybe he does come crashing back to earth at the precise worst time. And maybe an accumulation of tape is going to allow defensive coordinators to come up with the perfect game plan for him. All those things are realistic. But however this ends, I don't think it's going to end with Jake Browning playing like this, completely in over his head, you know, washed up quarterback who doesn't ever deserve a chance to start a game. I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, one other thing that you said at our post-game pop the other night was that was your all-time favorite Bengals regular season win.
Yes.
Which I was a little surprised by. Like, mm-hmm. I just didn't – it was a great game. I really thoroughly enjoyed it, but I was a little mm-hmm. surprised by that. So it made me think, Would you let's hear the list then. I assume that you have that list kind of always simmering around your head as you were as the I imagine it as the game was going on, you were briefly like moving it up, like, oh, up one spot now, oh, up one spot. And then the McPherson field goal after the Boyd play, and you're just like, boom, oh, up three spots right to the top. What is that list, and why would the Minnesota win now be at the top of it?
So when I have this conversation sometimes with people, I always say the 95 Reds
Yeah.
are my favorite ever Reds team. And number two is 2010. And folks will say to me, well, what about 1990? And I go, favorite for me doesn't mean most accomplished or best. Favorite for me, it's who was I with? What were the extenuating circumstances? Were there moments that I'll never forget? So, like I always say, the 95 team was senior year high school, freshman year college. I had the freedom to go to whatever game I wanted, and I did, and had like an awesome group of friends to go with. And people sort of checked out on the Reds because of the strike, and it just sort of felt like it was our own little thing. And I love that team. And but they got swept in the National League Division Series. And I love 2010 because it was the first time as an adult the Reds had been, really good. And the city fell in love with Joey Votto. And it was the first time I was on the air while the Reds were in a pennant race. And I went to 1,000 games that year. And I love that team. Got swept in the playoffs. So favorite for me always involves like, what do I remember about the environment, the atmosphere, who I was with, what I was doing? And so the game on Saturday combined an awesome atmosphere. Fans who didn't leave, thank God the weather was nice. A number of moments where it felt like this is about to go the other way. Tremendous stakes, the continuation of an awesome story in Jake Browning. And a handful of plays that I will always talk about. That T. Higgins play is the best play I've seen in person. Without on front and back, so like all of those things, who I was with, the atmosphere, walking out of the stadium, and just folks were so happy and high-fiving each other. I also got the sense this was the makeup of this crowd was a little bit different, where you had some folks who got their tickets a few weeks ago because somebody gave them up. And so you had more people who I think were just genuinely grateful to be there. That's my favorite all time regular season. I've only seen one playoff win in person. So, but it was an awesome experience. And so it's number one for me. Now, I have a top five. This game didn't exist a week ago. So what got bumped from the list?
Yeah.
Bengals Chiefs 2021. That's
Wow.
what. Yeah. And
Wow.
the reason it gets bumped is I wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
And again, for me, like I'm selfish about this. I wasn't there for that game. Now it was like it's the greatest wide receiver performance I've ever seen. Insanely fun game. Bunch of different times where it felt like if they don't score here, they lose. Iconic Burrow performance. That was awesome. But it slides off the list. So now I'm going to work my way up. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Number five, 1995 Thursday Night Football. Jeff Blake goes into Three River Stadium and torches the eventual AFC champs. A from out of nowhere performance on the road in prime time. Bengals were never on in prime time then. Only the bad teams got the occasional TNT Thursday game with whatever god-awful announcers they had. And, they go to Pittsburgh and throttle the Steelers, man. That was not the sort of thing that happened often during that time frame. It was sort of the rejuvenation of Shaq and Blake for a while. And so as a freshman at UD, had a bunch of like Western Pennsylvania people in our dorm. I obviously wasn't at that game, but I will never forget that night. And when I had Jeff Blake on my show for a throwback Thursday segment, I couldn't wait to talk with him about it. Number four. 2012 road win, week 16 at Pittsburgh. Josh
Pittsburgh.
Brown
Yeah.
makes the field goal. It's a de facto playoff game. Winner is in, loser goes home. It's the Steelers. It's Heinz Field. It is two coaches who did everything they could to hand the game to the other guy with their game management, but just such an exorcism that day. And it was basically beating the Steelers on the road in the playoffs.
Also, that is a great one, because that is the Dave Lapham in the locker room afterwards singing the Geno Atkins song, which is my favorite lap moment of all time, which was wow. He was walking through the locker room on air going, Geno Atkins is a man and a half. It's one of my favorite lap moments.
So now see, like I always talk about, like, all right, what were the circumstances? I had been dating my now wife for about 2 months, and that was the first time I met her sisters, and I watched the game at one of their houses and managed to not make a fool out of myself that much.
Congratulations.
Right. Thanks. Number three, 2015 game against the Seattle Seahawks. Still sure. The most bonkers game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, just two-time NFC champs come to town. Bengals are getting crushed. 17 points in the fourth quarter. They come back and win. Just an awesome day.
And that now, was the one where we ended up talking about how the gravitational pull played a role in the final game-winning yes. field goal, right? Neil deGrasse Tyson was like tweeting about it. Yes,
yeah,
that's but when like, you know you've gone totally over the edge.
But I think, you know, and that 2015 team was
The start of them being really fun.
It was the best of those five playoff teams, and it was like that day you thought, okay, maybe this year is going to be different. Up until Saturday, my favorite. Now I have to go back. This is when I was a kid. So if you're younger than us, you're not going to remember this game, and my apologies. But, like, sports are never cooler than when you're between 9 and 11.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was 11 in 1988. And during that period of time, we were not living here. But I was a Bengals fanatic in the middle of Jets, Giants, Eagles country. Also, the Bengals were never on TV. So the way I followed the Bengals was sitting through Jets games with my dad, waiting for the 10-minute ticker to see what the progress was. But on this random Saturday, they're on CBS. It's Madden and Summerall. And if they win, AFC Central champs, home field throughout. And so they play the defending Super Bowl champion, Washington Redskins. Chip Lowmiller comes in to make a chip shot field goal. And my mom is, we're at a James Way department store because we're Christmas shopping. But because it's the only thing on TV, it's on every television. And I got my Bengals like sweatshirt on and my hat I had gotten over Thanksgiving break when we came home. And he misses the field goal. The game goes to overtime. Barney Bussey sacks Doug Williams. David Grant recovers the fumble. I don't remember if they brought the field goal unit out on the field or ran a play or two, but Jim Breach makes the field goal. Sam Weish, I'll never forget them. He's got his fist like this on. No, this is an audio medium. And he's kneeling down as the kick is made, and somebody pours Gatorade on him. And it was just like, you're not supposed to have memories that are cooler than your favorite victories when you're 11, except Saturday managed to trump it. And I said that on Saturday, and I thought, okay, by the middle of the week, I will have calmed myself down. What I saw on Saturday is my favorite all-time Bengals victory.
Yeah.
That I've seen and talked about, and regardless of what happens the rest of the way, if you say to me the Minnesota game or the Jake Browning game or the T. Higgins catch, I'm going to remember being at Paycor on that Saturday in December.
Which is so funny because it felt like this sort of throwaway game in the middle of the schedule, like a 1 o'clock on a Saturday and Nick Mullins and the Vikings of all teams. It's just, it's so odd how that, but yeah, that's just it. That's one, two things there. One, those types of games that feel like nothing, that feel like throwaway games, are how you grow a fan base. Because if you know that any game can turn into something that is a number one on my all-time list, even with backup quarterbacks and whatever, at 1 o'clock on a Saturday, you're locked people for life. Like, you have drawn them in, and the Bengals have certainly long done that. But this was sort of a, you know,
yeah,
a solidification of that. You know what
and
I mean?
I also, And I also feel like, you know, it wasn't a primetime game, but it was a standalone game. You know, I know folks watching your Ohio Bobcats play in a bowl game might have been distracted by that.
Obviously, but, another big win, 10-win season for the Bobcats. Yeah,
it was the only NFL game happening at that time. And so you had more attention being paid to a Bengals-Vikings game than you would have had it been at 1 o'clock on a Sunday with all the other games going on. So it, I think that, to me, it made it feel bigger. It also made it feel like more people were chiming in and paying attention, and I think experiencing, though maybe not through the same exact lens, but more objective, but they were experiencing the same thing that we were. And I just, it was an awesome day, man. It was an awesome victory. And so, yeah, that's my all time favorite.
Well, I still can't believe that. I know you weren't there, but I still can't believe that the Chiefs win got bumped off the list or wasn't higher. But that's okay.
I wasn't there
again. Yeah, it's situational. It's. But yeah, to me, that is certainly probably one of the craziest ones. I always go back. People ask me like, "What's the wildest, game you've ever that was kind of coming up?" And I was like, I just continue to go back, and I have a hard time topping Halloween in Miami. Back in 2013, the walk-off safety.
The walk-off safety.
You had the phantom holding call on Jermaine Gresham. You had the Geo run. You had
Geno Atkins got hurt.
Geno Atkins gets hurt. Yeah. It had absolutely everything. It was totally bananas. They were coming off the Jonathan Martin debacle. It just happened in Miami. Yeah. Like, everything about that situation, that game, that day was just totally outlandish. And of course it ended in a walk-off safety by Cam Wake on Andy Dalton. And so but to me, the Brent Grimes had a crazy pick six. There was just a million things in that game. I always go back to that one for wildest, that and the couple of the Packers games. But that's a whole other topic that we won't go down. Mo.
Yeah, here's what I remember at the safety. I just remember somebody, I was watching that game at the Holy Grail, and I just remember Andy takes a safety to end the game, and somebody with a real loud voice goes, "Of course he did," and close our tab and let's go home.
Oh, it's perfect. Absolutely. All right. At that point, that really sums up how people felt about Andy Dalton in that era right then. It's like,
yeah, and I just made Jake Browning better than him. How about that?
You did.
Poor Andy.
You did.
Just Top catching Andy. Strays.
Yes. All right, Mo. I'll talk to you this afternoon on ESPN 1530. Looking forward to it.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
All right, Mo Egger, ESPN 1530. Quite a list. I mean, there's a lot to choose from, but you got to respect going all the way back to Chip Low Miller and Doug Williams.
You really do. I was sitting here trying to think of who the Thursday night football announcers might have been that he referenced.
Would that have been a Mike Patrick era?
I was thinking it might be a Mike Patrick. And Mike Patrick always had the basketball and football, the ability to turn the most menial play into sound like it was the biggest thing ever. Be like, "Vi Sikahima with a 7-yard punt return." You just be like, "Calm down there, Mike Patrick."
I was a big Mike Patrick fan in those ESPN Thursday days. I really liked. I thought he was the voice of a big game. Of course, what did I know? But I always enjoyed him. I was sad to see when it seemed to go sideways for him later on in his career. All right, we've got some stuff to sift through here. We've got to go through the growler bet recap, and I've got some Arby's here too. The growler bet is going to take some time. So a thing happened. All right. We did the double last week because I forgot it against the Colts. And so I really compounded the problem by doing this, in that we went with Jake Browning's completion percentage and Chase Brown's yards from scrimmage. And Jake Browning completion percentage is, it would have been hard to hit if he didn't land on a number that I berated people for not guessing and being disappointed in early in the season.
Yeah.
In that he ended up right smack dab, unbelievably, on 69.0.
Nice.
Indeed. And Chase Brown ends up at 51. So what happens, Dave, you might be surprised to find out, a lot of people guessed 69 and wrote nice. Okay? Like, a lot. Okay? So what I wanted to do then was say, okay, who was closest amongst all the people that guessed 69 to Chase Brown's 51? Well, guess what a lot of people did? 69, 69, double nice. And nobody got closer than that on the Chase Brown amongst the people that guessed 69. Which has just put me into all kinds of problems here on the Growler bet. Okay? I was looking for a good tiebreaker. Now, so what I want to go down. So Daniel Bayless, Doug McMillan, David Murphy, Glenn Hammerly, Michael Tomes, who I appreciated, who wrote great podcast this week. I miss Jay, but I compare it to having divorced parents at Christmas as I listen to both podcasts now and get almost twice the content. Thank you. I miss Jay too, but I'm happy we've been found a way to make it work for everyone.
I feel like I'm your new boyfriend, Donnie, or something that the kids don't like. Yes. Donnie's got to pick you up from school today. Oh, no,
Donnie, I don't want a gift. Oh, is Donnie going to be coming to pick me up? Jeez. Donnie drinks too much. All right. So anyway, we've got Corey Ryan, 69, 69. Shout out to him. Bengals growler bet on low for 12 hours. Cutlets cut extra thin. Like that one. Cutlets reference after our Lou Anarumo conversation last week. So after all of that, and kudos to everybody there, I actually decided to go off the board a little bit here to break this tie. And that was somebody else. Dave Allen guessed 69.69 for his double nice. Okay, which was close enough and had 46 on Chase Brown. I think the combination of those two makes him the winner for me. So you're scrunching people. You're not like, wait, he didn't get anything right. I understand that, but I feel like the 69.69 and the 46 is the best overall double guess of all of them that I found.
Am I going to have to testify in the class action suit over this?
or we can just open it back up and have everybody that had 69 guess again next week. And I don't feel like I want to go through that.
All right. We'll go with Dave Allen. We'll take the litigation.
Yeah, I know I'm going to feel it on this. It doesn't feel fair, does it?
Kudos to everybody who remembered back when you chastised them for not taking 69 and just showing their loyalty to the show that they've been paying
attention. Or this is just who our audience is, Dave. Like, this is just...
Possibly.
This is who we are. Yeah. Shout out to some of my good growler subject headers. I did a few. This wasn't a subject header, but Aaron Burns did give us an update. He said he was growing a rally beard about a month or two ago. It was getting a little grizzly. He has shaved it down to just a mustache now. So good to know that Aaron's gone mustache on that. I appreciate getting these updates. Andrew White says, growler with a suit and no tie, which I appreciated. A shout out to Jamar Chase. Kent Montgomery, every time a bell rings, an angel gets a growler. Well done. Good Christmas. Brian Ramsetter, Edward Growler Hands. I love any Edward Scissorhands type of reference. The idea of having growlers, I really like that. Daniel Breitenbach, I only pound out my cutlets with a growler. Smash it. double references to That's previous great. Episodes. That's certainly a winner for me.
That's true.
Love that. Well done. Okay, so I apologize to those that feel that this was an unfair process, but to this I say, You knew we were making it up as we go along anyway.
And it's
so
their own,
that's just part
their
of
own
it.
Fault for getting that far along in the podcast.
Yep.
You know, you got to figure the wheels are about off.
The only rules are there are no rules. All right. Arby's, before we wrap this up, I've got one. This is from Mo mentioned I met up with him at for a post UC Dayton beer after the game. It was myself, Richard Skinner, Mike Petralia, Kelsey Conway. We were at Holy Grail, and I am 43 years old, Dave, and I have two children. Going out to Holy Grail on a middle of a drunken doubleheader in the banks is not typically where I wind up. But people were going there. I used to do these things all the time. Let's go, let's do it. And so we're sitting there, and it's great. We're talking about the game. We're talking about the team. Mo shows up. Great time. It's like the good old days, right? I'm enjoying myself. Something very weird happened. I'm bald, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm comfortable with it. I'm very happy about my follicle position in life. You know, I'm confident in my own skull. And a man from a table next to me came up and rubbed my head.
Mm.
And said, pointed out that he's bald and I'm bald. We're bald brothers. And kind of rubbed my head and then went off. This is why I don't like going out. I feel like there's a level of personal space. I know people have been drinking all day. We're all having fun. I didn't say anything. Like, I'm like, hey, let's have fun with it. Yeah, balds. Woo, right? I'm here to play along, all right? I feel like I'm on the younger turf, right? I'll play along the games. But don't touch another man's head.
No.
Like, don't invade personal space. And then they were like, him and his buddies were like laughing at the table afterwards. That's fine. Like, it's cool, man. Like, I'm here to have a good time. I'm cool with it, right? Like, we're having a good time. But just, can we not?
Yeah.
Can we? I felt a little violated.
You should have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good rule of thumb to just not really touch anyone.
Yeah.
Let alone not touch strangers.
Yeah.
And if you're going to touch someone, a pat on the shoulder, pat on the back, shake hands. But the rubbing the head.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
We balds don't deserve this.
No. And I think we balds should come together.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I feel like it's potentially what's more over the line. they're both over for the fact, but rubbing the head of someone with a big head of hair or someone who's bald and you're really total skin to skin.
Mm.
I think the hair is more playful. Wow. Look at how great this hair is. It's fun to play with your hair, I guess. Again, over the line. It's demeaning when you touch another man's head, bald on bald or not.
You're right.
I feel like it's just a little much. That's all. That's all.
You might have to start wearing a helmet. That might be the way to go.
I'm going helmet to protect myself.
Yeah.
No, I get it. It was all in good fun. It was a night out. People have been having a big old time. Crazy stuff happens. You laugh about it. But I just remember driving home thinking like, that was weirder than I probably gave it credit for.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just to kind of announce right now, if people see you out and about, don't touch your head.
Love high fives. Love rocks. Love like even an elbow, right?
Yeah. Little forearm smash like the Bash Brothers.
And you know what? I'll even take a like hugs and hand pounds type hello greeting if you're feeling like we really know each other or whatever.
Will you do that kid and play dance where they tap feet while they're dancing around?
Yeah. Yes, I would do that. I would. Okay. If someone walked up to me and said, kid and play, dance, please, yeah. I would probably give it a shot and hope I didn't hurt myself.
I'd opt for that.
For yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. But I'd just say, I think, I would just say maybe not touch that.
I think this is fair. I think it's fair. I think you were accosted, you were assaulted. I
Filing
think
any lawsuits or anything like that, and I
I mean, we're already
appreciate
gonna,
the comfort.
I mean, the guy, he meant well, but hopefully if he's listening, he knows to just maybe think that through a little bit
It's
before you
okay. It's okay. I
press
just wanted
send.
to address it just so people,
What
maybe
if, but like,
if I can help one other bald,
what if he's had a lot of good luck since then, and like he's attributing it to that? And then it turns out,
maybe.
I mean, then you got to kind of welcome
Maybe.
people to
If
rub
there's
your
more to
head.
this story that I don't know and you're listening, please send me an email and let me know if there's more to this that I should be thinking about. Anyway.
Well, I'll have my bald head on a swivel now because I
Yeah.
don't want that happening to me. So I wear a helmet though already.
Like, well, I mean, but you just avoid public at all
I
costs pretty
do.
much
I
as well.
do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty much down here in the bunker most of the time, just hiding out.
All right. Thanks to everybody for listening. Mo Egger, on Thursday, we'll be back. Ryan Wilson will be our guest. We'll be focusing more on Pittsburgh. You'll hear more from what went down this week at Paycor Stadium. We'll talk to coaches, players, all that good stuff. The Jake Browning era continues. What will he say this week that will make everyone fall in love with him? Who knows? Every time the man steps in front of a microphone, Cincinnati Bengals Nation swoons, it seems, for Jake Browning. So, anyway, all right. Thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.